Detweiler, and I invite you to come and join me as we take a pause in our busy day and pursue soul care, as we allow our bodies to slow down and our minds to be renewed with goodness, truth, and hope. This is PRN. Pause, renew, next. Hey friends, welcome back. In January on the podcast, we continued our theme of being a human in process and looked at normal human emotions and reactions that tend to come up as we're navigating life as a human on planet Earth. Particularly, we're looking at emotions and reactions related to the fight or flight response. First, we looked at anger, and then in the last episode, we considered fear and stress. If you missed those episodes, I hope you'll go back and give them a listen. Today, we'll be talking about anxiety and worry. But first, let's begin by doing a slowdown and centering exercise. However you're arriving here today, I'm so glad that you're here. Let's bring ourselves into the present moment. If you're able and you're not driving, place your hands together palm to palm, like praying hands. And then you're going to rub your palms together. You can do this fast and briskly, or slowly. There are benefits to both. Do whichever feels better to you. Going fast will create friction that helps your palms heat up, and that is a regulating practice. When we rub our palms together, the blood and energy circulation in our hands increases, and that can help us if we're feeling tired or unfocused. Going slowly also can be regulating and helpful. Take your left finger slowly down your right hand, and then back up again, switching hands. Almost like sweeping them back and forth, like hand sweeping, back and forth, slowly. Notice which one feels better to you, and then continue as long as you want to. And when you're ready, we'll continue with our podcast. Today, I want to talk about the differences between fear, stress, anxiety, and worry, because I think there's some overlap between all of them, and they all can be related to the fight or flight response. So as a review from last time, fear is an automatic response to a present threat or danger that activates the fight or flight response. It can be a short-term or long-term feeling. Stress is a physical or mental reaction to an external cause, like a deadline, a transition, or a life change. It's a normal response that can help motivate us to face a challenge. Like we talked about last time, neither one of them is bad. There are our body's reactions and responses to what's happening in or around us. Today, though, I want to dive into the topics of anxiety and worry. The words anxiety and fear often get interchanged, so it's important to understand the difference. Fear is a response to a present threat. Anxiety is an anticipation of a future threat that can cause feelings of dread and inner turmoil. Anxiety can be helpful because it motivates us to prepare, but it also can be harmful if it prevents us from doing things we need to do. And then I think about worry as being the mind's reaction to the anxiety. Worry is dwelling on difficulties or troubles. Words I might use in relation to worry are rumination, preparation, or maybe in a way, problem solving. But we'll come back to that. Let's settle our attention first on anxiety. As with fear, stress, and anger, I feel like anxiety gets a bad rap. It is, however, a word that gets thrown around a lot these days. A lot of the population could meet the qualifications of having generalized anxiety disorder. Some of those qualifications are having excessive anxiety or worry, finding it difficult to control our worry, being keyed up or on edge, difficulty concentrating, irritability, muscle tension, finding it hard to fall asleep or stay asleep, and being easily fatigued. I mean, a majority of people, almost, could qualify for having those symptoms. Does that mean that we're all disordered? No. But I think the situations we find ourselves in, personally and culturally, lend us to noticing and anticipating future threats all around us. Maybe it's not us that's the problem, as much as living a human life full of suffering and around too much stimulation and information that our minds and bodies aren't made for. Phones and social media are a place to start with that, but I'll get off that soapbox for now. In our bodies, I think fear and anxiety function similarly. Either way, we're going into the fight or flight response. Our bodies are preparing for threats. I wonder if our bodies have a difficult time differentiating current threat from future threat. It just responds to a threat or challenge in the way that it was designed to, by going into survival mode, by prepping up physically and hormonally for the challenge at hand. In the ways that I talked about last time, biologically, things that happen, but also by heightening our senses to take in any clear signs of danger, our eyes begin scanning. We don't even know we're doing it, looking for threats. Our ears become more attuned to noises because we're looking for threats. We may even become more sensitive to physical touch. Anxiety is a biological process. Just so you know, it's really hard to talk your body out of fight or flight by using logic. There is no thinking regimen that helps that. The way our nervous systems come back off the ledge of anxiety is when they feel safe. Your nervous system works faster than your thinking brain, and it is well built, and it cannot be conned. It will feel safe when it is safe and not before. I think this is an important time to talk about felt safety. There's a difference between safety and felt safety. Safety means that I'm safe, but I can be safe and not feel safe. Felt safety means that I am safe and I feel safe. For someone who's been through difficulty, trauma, or an extended period of anxiety, their nervous system is on a high alert much of the time. It may have a hard time coming out of a state of hypervigilance and being able to find felt safety. That's not a sin, and it's not a weakness. It's a survival strategy, and not one that they've chosen for themselves. I have never met anyone who was happy they struggled with anxiety, panic attacks, trauma, or OCD. Yet we're told in scripture and by society and many pastors not to be anxious. Being told that God says we should not be anxious really doesn't help. It just adds guilt and shame on top of the anxiety. It may even make it difficult to understand the idea that God is a safe place if it seems like He's demanding something of me that I can't seem to make happen. Just like with fear, I'm wondering, is do not be anxious a command or a reassurance? God, after all, designed our bodies and nervous systems, and living in a fallen world means that we have to survive an awful lot. That's part of being a human in process. However, as we heal and we experience moments of felt safety, our nervous systems will begin to readjust accordingly. Felt safety can be found in co-regulation. When we're in fight or flight, we're dysregulated. As our nervous systems feel safe again, they go back into a state of regulation. Co-regulation is finding safety by being with a safe person whose nervous system helps ours find regulation too. You can think of a crying baby being soothed by their mother. That's an easy way to think of that. KJ Ramsey says, "The joy and well-being we long for are found only in relationships that shift our nervous systems towards connection, a process called regulation. It's how we're designed. We can spend time with safe people and our nervous systems will calm down. We do that with our babies, that's part of the attachment process, but guess what? We still do that as adults. And like we talked about last time, the Lord is also a relationship where we can find felt safety. But there are also other ways that we can help our bodies come into a place of felt safety, by doing grounding practices or deep breathing, through prayer and meditation, by spending time in nature or in other environments where we feel at peace, by listening to music, by crying and releasing stored up adrenaline and cortisol. And there are so many more. Sometimes therapy and or medication may also be a part of this process of helping our bodies learn to regulate. Another note about anxiety, we all experience it slightly differently. You know, as a beginning counselor, I got trained in CBT and I spent a lot of time working on people with their thoughts, retraining, reframing their thoughts. But as I've spent over a decade and a half sitting with people, and as I've learned to understand myself better, I realize that although that is a helpful tool, not everybody experiences anxiety primarily in their thoughts. We can experience anxiety in many different ways. Some people notice anxiety in their emotions, some more in their bodies, and some more in their thinking, although mostly a combination of the three. I encourage you to notice how you experience anxiety. What do you notice? body sensations, particular thoughts, more emotional shifts like irritability or sensitivity to sounds and overstimulation. It's helpful to notice these symptoms as they are a tip-off to us about the state of our own nervous systems. And speaking of thinking, let's shift now into worry. Worry is the thinking part of anxiety. And although some people do it more than others, we all do it. It's when the mind takes on the anxiety and starts processing through it. It's the mental preparation for what is coming. That's why worry is never about what's happening now. It's always in preparation for what is going to be coming. It's the partner of anxiety. Worry tends to be a practice in rumination, but we don't all do it the same way or about the same things. Here's where I'm going to bring in some of the wisdom of the Enneagram. You guys know I love it. According to the Enneagram system of personalities, there are 9 different types of personalities. 3 of them are led by heart and emotions, 3 through the body and gut, those are people of action, and 3 are head types who lead by thinking. All of us think, feel, and do. But depending on our personality, we focus on one more than the others. If you know a lot about the Enneagram, then this is going to make a lot of sense to you. If not, that's okay. Notice as you listen how different people can focus so differently, and notice if any of the different types resonate for you in the way that you find yourself worrying. So the 3 head or thinking types are 5, 6, and 7, and we'll start with them. 5s probably wouldn't say that they worry, but they spend a lot of time in their heads, and they spend a lot of time researching. They deal with fear by preparing and knowing as much as possible about whatever the thing is and making sure they are competent and knowledgeable. So worry for them may look like preparing and problem solving in their heads, gathering as much information as possible to make sure that they are prepared. 6s spend a lot of time thinking through problems and looking for signs of danger. They tend by nature to be more on the anxious side because they are prepped up to notice threats and signs of danger. They tend to be worst case scenario people. And they are amazing in a crisis because unlike everyone else in the room, they are prepared. They spend a lot of time in their heads worrying, and their worry looks like running through scenarios of what could go wrong and what they would do if it did, like preparing for anything that might happen. Their worry is also a kind of problem solving and preparation. Type 7s, they tend not to worry as much, or at least they wouldn't say that they do. They do a lot of thinking, actually, but they try their hardest not to focus on the negative. So that means they spend a lot of time reframing scary or negative thoughts into positive outcomes. They're outrunning fear by staying busy and finding fun things to do, making future plans and goals, and thinking about how they can make those goals happen and how they'll be having fun in the future. They probably really wouldn't say that they worry, but they do spend a lot of mental energy escaping fear by reframing. Now types 8s, 9s, and 1s, there are body and gut types. They focus more on action than on thinking or emotion. 8s in general are the most action-oriented. They will jump into action to avoid having to think and worry. They think quickly and don't like to waste time rehearsing things mentally. If possible, they're going to take control of the situation and turn it around to avoid what they fear, or at least jump into action to avoid having to think about it. So when worry and anxiety do show up over a situation they don't have control over, it can be very uncomfortable. 9s don't like to think either. Spending time in their own heads thinking about problems is difficult for 9s, so they often find ways to avoid it so that they can keep their own peace. 9s prize peace and especially the lack of conflict more than any other number. Especially if they feel helpless to change a situation, they will change the topic out loud with people or even in their heads. Primarily, they drown out thoughts by staying busy or by numbing out. You will find them listening to podcasts or audiobooks, reading books, playing a game on their phone, or watching a show in order to avoid their own negative thoughts. 1s worry a lot, just like 6s. However, their worries are often heard through an inner critic that is constantly giving them notes on how they could have or should have done better. or on ways that they need to improve or be more excellent, how they will not be good enough. Their thought life is often spent worrying that they might have been bad or that they will not meet their own or others' expectations. Twos, threes, and fours are heart and emotional types. They take in the world through feelings, and then afterwards, they turn to thoughts and action. Twos are very focused on people and relationships, so most of their worry revolves around relationships. How or why people aren't getting along, how they said something wrong and may have been misperceived by someone else, how someone might be mad at them, how they can improve their marriage, parenting, or other relationships, playing and replaying conversations in their heads or making up conversations that haven't even happened yet. These are some of the ways that they find themselves ruminating. Threes are worried about their performance, success, and how others perceive them. They worry about how and if they will reach their goals, if they will be successful, and particularly if others will view them as successful. Fours spend a lot of time in their own internal emotional landscape, and their thinking and worries often reflect this. They often spend a lot of deep time reflecting and internally questioning themselves. They're very in touch with their own authenticity and often worry that they're insignificant, unnoticed, or unimportant. They may have visions for their life, but worry about how they will get there. So that was very brief. I could have gone into much more depth on all of those, but you can see just in that amount that some of us by nature are more prone to worry, and all of us will worry, but the kinds of things we worry about are different. Although we all have human needs and we all have human relationships and we all worry about danger, the amount that we spend time thinking about all those things differs depending on our life stories, our genetics, and our personalities. I do want to make a note here about genetics and obsessive tendencies. Some people have what I call a brain that gets stuck, meaning all of us have thoughts that pop in from time to time, and then we can dismiss them and move on. But some people have a brain that latches onto things that cause fear, and it's like the gear shifter gets stuck. It's hard to dismiss thoughts and move on. This can be particularly true with OCD, for instance, sometimes people on the spectrum as well. Worry and rumination with a brain that gets stuck is not a reflection on your thought life or your self-control or your devotion to God, as much as it is about a brain chemistry that gets locked in the on position. If you have a lot of intrusive thoughts that cause you a lot of anxiety, you find yourself worrying and ruminating, and you can't seem to get your mind off of them, I encourage you to go meet with a licensed counselor or psychiatrist to get some support for this. Worry, in general, is slightly helpful in that it helps us problem solve. Otherwise, though, it can waste a lot of time, thinking, and emotional energy that we could have been using more productively. Jesus talks about worry in Matthew 6, where he says, "So do not worry, saying, 'What shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or what shall we wear?' For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." In other words, we don't need to waste time mentally problem solving about our basic needs, because the Lord promises he will provide for us. That is back to felt safety. We are not living in lack. In his kingdom, there is more than enough. Instead of wasting our mental and emotional resources on survival strategies, he's inviting us to trust him for those things. His invitation is to giving your thoughts and energy to his kingdom instead. But this is something that takes practice. We learn felt safety as we learn that we can trust. The more and longer we know Christ, the more we can believe this is true. When we lack control, which we often do in this life, we will fall into fear and anxiety. It's our body's response. But the Lord reassures us that he's happy to hold our worries and anxiety for us. For instance, in 1 Peter 5:7, it says, "Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you." He doesn't say get rid of it. He doesn't say straighten up, you sinner. Again, Peter invites us to cast it on him because he cares for us. God wants to be our co-regulator. One way that we can practice felt safety and a release of fear, anxiety, stress, and worry is to practice rest and Sabbath. One day that we pause from production and work. It is the reset that our bodies are designed for. Dallas Willard says, Sabbath is a way of life. It is simply casting all your anxiety on him to find that in actual fact, he cares for you. It is using the keys to the kingdom to receive the resources for abundant living and ministering. There's nothing like rest to reset the nervous system. Rest may mean sleep, or it may mean play. It might mean using creativity and making something, playing music, going on a hike. It's filling your cup rather than depleting it. It's the pause of work and striving. Other things that may help with worry are writing out your thoughts or saying them out loud. This can help to derail the circular track of thinking in our heads. That cycle of rumination back and forth, back and forth. Derail it and get it out. Making a plan can also help. Our brains are problem solving, but once we settle upon one, a plan of action, then our brains, it will help them derail off that rumination cycle. And then our brain won't feel like it has to keep replaying it over and over. Moving our bodies can also help our brains get unstuck. If you're finding yourself ruminating, get up and move. Move to another room, change your scenery, go out and take a walk, get started on a project, and you may notice that your thoughts have gotten dislodged and changed as well. Finally, there's the idea of benevolent detachment that we've already talked about. It's the knowledge that sometimes these things are just too big for me. Like, I can't keep myself and everyone else safe all the time. And I'm willingly passing this to the Lord to hold for now because I can't hold it by myself. We're just not big or powerful enough to solve all the world's problems. We weren't designed to be. So we can cast it on him and let him hold it for us. I know we can't do that forever, always, but maybe you can do it for an hour. Maybe you can say, will you hold this for me for an hour? It'll always be there for you when you come back. And just like he said in Matthew 6, each day will have its own troubles. Staying in the present with what's happening now, instead of moving into the future over things we can't yet control, can help. And some of the grounding practices that we do, like deep breathing, like breath prayers, like sitting with somebody in the present moment, can help us come back into the present and shift out of future mode, which is where anxiety and worry reside. Well, friends, we could have gone even more in depth, but I feel like I've already talked a really long time. I hope that some or all of this was helpful for you and that you can carry away some good nuggets. And now, before we move on with what comes next for our day, I want to leave you with a benediction. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. I'm Jenny Detweiler with PRN. Pause, renew, next. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.